Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Tuesday, April 14th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast is The Oil Conundrum. This is simply going to be a continuation of some of our analysis on the oil market, in particular the recent OPEC Plus cuts of 10 million barrels of oil per day. Of course, Thunder Thumbs, the President of the United States, is ecstatic. And of course, he wants this number to double. He was thrilled that 10 million was there, but now it has to be 20 million. And we're going to get to why that might just be the case, because there's no demand, ladies and gentlemen. You have to understand the dynamics of supply and demand. You need not be an economist. You just need to have been a student of Econ 101 and just have paid enough attention for the first couple of weeks, and you could have solved this riddle. There is no demand globally. Nada. Doesn't exist. Yet you have so much production. You have so much oil and gas all over the globe. I stated here yesterday, storage facilities are almost at their max. You have oil tankers that are filled, that are just simply sitting out at sea. Nowhere to go, nowhere to be. You know why? Because there's no demand. So Thunder Thumbs can tweet all he wants, thanking the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, thanking President Putin of Russia, the whole lot of them. He can do whatever he wants. Ain't going to make a difference. Now, we said, well, there could be a short-lived little rally in oil prices. Of course, nothing goes straight down. Nothing goes straight up. That's going to be true for oil and gas as well. But guess what we saw today? We saw a huge drop-off in the price of crude oil. WTI and Brent were both down several percentage points today at their lows. We have WTI at $20.58. We have Brent back below $30, just hovering right around there at the time of this podcast. Unbelievable, but not really if you understand the laws of supply and demand, and if you're honest with yourself and if you're not going to go off believing politicians. And the other thing you have to ask yourself, too, in all of this, OPEC Plus, you know, back in the day, you could say, well, they were a pretty strong cartel. Now they're much more fragmented. There's a lot more ego, you know, a lot more at stake. Of course, the United States has gained a lot of power in the energy market. Russia has gotten its act together a little bit better. They're a huge player in the energy space as well, obviously. And cartels are always, always fragile. They're always fragile because there's always an incentive for one party within that cartel to leave. To leave, because if everybody in the cartel agrees to cut prices, or to cut production, well, you know, all else being equal, well, then supply or prices will probably pick up, right? So that gives an incentive to one of those members to say, ooh, I'm going to leave because prices are going to go up. So I'm going to keep producing and I'm going to sell at the higher price, but I'm going to try to get market share at the same time. These things are very fragile. So you have to trust that OPEC Plus is going to stick to the plan. Now, they might. And if what we think comes to pass, meaning the global economy is going to get worse, much worse before it gets any better, because printing money is not a panacea, okay? It's not. Then these prices are going to come down all by themselves. With it, production. Production will probably follow. Your storage tanks are already filled. Your oil tankers are already filled. Where else are you going to put it? Nowhere. So you're just going to stop altogether. And hoping and praying that somehow, some way, there's going to be demand that just sparks up somewhere. It's not going to happen, folks. Not to the degree that is, quote-unquote, needed to save the day or to save so many oil and gas players. Not just here in the United States, but globally. You know, we've talked about this here for months. For months, well before the onset of COVID-19. That a lot of the global protests, of course, which have been, you know, at least temporarily put down because you got to stay home because of COVID-19, that these global protests are not transitory. They are history in the making. People were already at the end of their ropes before COVID-19. Do you think they're going to be fine now after COVID-19? There's no way. It's going to be worse. You talk about a pressure cooker. What are these people going to do? They had nothing before. They have even less now. You think they're just going to throw their hands up in the air and say, well, COVID-19 and we're done. I don't think so. I don't think so at all. And somewhat of a connection with this, you're starting to hear some rumors that the G7, some of the largest economies in the world, are considering debt forgiveness of a lot of these very countries that are suffering from some of these protests and a whole bunch of other economic problems. Ain't this dandy? Ain't this dandy? In an attempt, I'm sure, to alleviate the pressure of a lot of these global protests and the global unrest that is just waiting in the wings. And it is going to be much, much worse than what it was before the onset of COVID-19. It was bad before, it's even worse now. So what do you think is going to happen? Now, mind you, a lot of these countries were involved or are heavily dependent on oil and gas. Well, that's getting decimated. So again, putting more pressure on these countries and these people in these countries. They're going to demand change. You talk about all of the money printing that is taking place. You're talking about all of these shortages that are taking place around the world because of the supply chains, agriculture, depending on where you are, the Middle East, Africa, suffering from locusts. Not good for food. Not good for anybody. You talk about nationalization. We talked about this yesterday. Countries are going to start closing up their borders. They're going to say, oh, well, we got to make sure we take care of our own. The French got to take care of the French. The Brits got to take care of the Brits. China's got to take care of the Chinese. Americans got to take care of Americans. So we're not going to send you all of our food stuff. And you're not going to send us all of yours either. What do you think is going to happen to the price of food? Something that was already expensive in a lot of these poor countries to begin with. This is a recipe for disaster. But the oil conundrum obviously comes down to the president back and forth trying to play both sides of this. We want low oil prices. Oh, no, we don't. We want higher oil prices because we can't have the energy sector going by the wayside, even though they've squandered their resources, even though they're coming on bended knee to Washington, D.C., meaning you and me, the taxpayer, to bail them out. And we have an interesting article out of Reuters, which I'm going to read in its entirety. It's not that long, but it gets to the crux of the matter, especially in Texas, which, of course, is a very important state when it comes to energy. A lot of people think, oh, well, you know, Houston's just this boom town. It's just the mecca. Everything is just fantastic. Well, we're going to see some problems in Houston. Houston, we have a problem. That is most definitely going to be the case as this unwinds over the coming weeks, months, and probably years. Okay? Just be on the lookout for it and be forewarned here at the Capitol News that we told you so. All right? So just look out for it. Market performance, I mean, despite all of the terrible news, it's a great day for the stock market. Why not? Why not? Dow Jones, S&P 500 up a few percentage points. Same thing with Russell 2000. The NASDAQ just took off like a rocket ship for about 4%. The NASDAQ 100 was up almost 5%. Now at the time of this podcast in the futures markets, they are down a little bit, but nothing to write home about. Japanese markets are trading right now. They are flat. Europe was a mixed bag. Australia is down about 1%, but they've been rallying as well. Some headline news in China. China cuts a one-year MLF rate to a record low of 2.95%. The People's Bank of China lowered the rate on its medium-term funding for financial institutions to the lowest on record as policymakers sought to prop up the economy further because of COVID-19. The one-year medium-term lending facility, MLF, of course, they have their acronyms too. I guess they're all in the good old boys club. Loans to financial institutions were cut by 20 basis points to 2.95%. The move should also pave the way for a similar reduction to the country's benchmark loan prime rate, LPR, which will be announced on the 20th of April. Fantastic. Some other rosy news. Global economy to suffer worst year since the 1930s. Great reason for stocks to rally. The world economy is expected to shrink 3% in 2020, the worst year since the Great Depression of the 1930s. And this compares to a 0.1% contraction seen in 2009, because there is no China that is just going to pull the global economy out of the depths of any type of financial crisis or economic collapse. Not there, folks. We've been talking about this for months. We have not seen a damn thing yet. Not a thing. We have not seen Hong Kong collapse. We have not seen China collapse because they are one huge Ponzi scheme. Make no mistake about it. We have not seen the Australian housing market collapse, amongst other things. We have not seen the Canadian housing market collapse, amongst other things. We do have a recession, a big recession in Mexico. And believe me, there's many, many recessions all over the place. We are in recession here in the United States. It's just a matter of time before it is officially called one by the National Bureau of Economic Research. We have done many, many presentations on this on Capital Economics on our website, thecapitalnews.com. Do check those out. In addition to what we talk about here on this podcast on a near daily basis. Make no mistake about it, okay? That's where we're headed. Great Depression if we're lucky. If we can avoid it, thank God, but that's probably where we're headed. Get ready. That's some of your market performance on your commodity front. Even natural gas was down, right? That continues to fall. $1.64 per million British thermal units. We have gold and silver making a nice move over the past couple of days, but pulling back at the time of this podcast. Gold is at $1,722 an ounce. Silver is at $15.68 an ounce. So quite the run, especially in gold. Silver is falling, but at a lesser pace. I do believe that in the long term, silver will outperform on a percentage basis. You have to understand the amount of manipulation that is taking place in these precious metals markets. It is staggering. You know, I came across an interesting data point just the other day. It's a little bit dated, but nevertheless, it still shows the trend, still shows the remarkable difference between the physical market versus the paper market, which is what you're going to see if you're looking at SLV for silver or GLD for gold. But in particular, when you're looking at silver, and you look at JP Morgan, and you look at the amount of buying of physical silver that they have been involved with, you're talking about 140 million ounces, not pounds, ounces, 140 million ounces of silver on their books. And there are some analysts who think it's a multiple of that, that they're holding off balance sheet or holding somewhere else. But we'll just go with what we know, 140 million. This was about a couple years ago. And ever since Donald Trump became president, it's really taken off. All right. So I don't know if there's any type of linkage here or whatever. But the difference between the spot price, which I just read off to you, about $15.68, versus what you're going to pay for actual physical silver, if you go online or you call up any type of precious metal dealer, you're going to be paying $8 over that, and you got to buy volume to get that type of price. All right, you're talking about an American Silver Eagle, all right, just 1 ounce, okay? You're talking $9, $10 over spot, all right? And depending on the dealer broker, it could be even more than that. You got to the price basically has to double from a spot standpoint, from the paper trading standpoint, just to break even. So there is a big, let's just call it for the lack of a better word, I guess, a disconnect between what's going on. But when you understand the manipulation that's taking place, because these are futures contracts, this is paper. When this unravels, and it will at some point, there is going to be a huge, huge move in the price of silver and gold as well, but silver especially, in my opinion. In my opinion. And when you have the central bank, when you have the Federal Reserve and other central banks the world over printing as much as they are, you know, it's a hedge. It's a proper thing to be diversified. Look it up. I do not give financial advice here. I give information. I tell you what I do, what I would do. And I would be looking into precious metals if I were you. Gold and silver. And of course, others as well. On the bond front, we have the U.S. 10-year Treasury note yielding 0.74%. Relatively unchanged for the past couple of days. All right, so that's some of the market news. What else do we have? We have hedge funds and some private equity firms coming to Washington, D.C. Boo-hoo-hoo-hoo. We want some of that stimulus money, too, because we're small businesses, and we're running out of money. So bail us out. Can you believe these jokers? And they're going to get it. They're going to get it. It might not be reported that they're going to get it, but they're going to get it. I mean, understand the game here, ladies and gentlemen. Some hedge funds have already been getting bailed out since last September. What do you think all this repo fiasco has been? Because hedge funds, some of them, not all of them, but some of them play a big role in making a market in the overnight lending market. Okay? They were getting bailed out before. All right? And of course, we have a president of the United States who is not going to comply with the inspector general who was created to oversee all of this stimulus money. Okay? So they're going to get it. They're going to get it. These hedge funds, which is unbelievable, really, because the name of it is hedge fund. Hedge fund. You are supposed to be hedged. You are supposed to be prepared for these types of what you call, in statistics, tail risks. Okay? You have the bell curve. Most of the meat of the data is in the middle of the bell. But then you got the tails, the tail ends of the bell curve. Those are tail risks. Those are one-offs. Your black swan events, whatever you want to call them. Hedge funds are supposed to be hedged. They are supposed to be insured against such calamity, such unknown risks and events. Nope, that's not how it works here. Get levered up 10 to 1, 20 to 1, 30 to 1, 40 to 1. Only God knows how much. If it works out for you, fantastic, honey. Let's go buy another house in the Hamptons, shall we? But if we get screwed, if we make a mistake, no, honey, we don't have to sell that house. We're just going to need to go to Washington, D.C. We're going to call up our good old buddies in the Treasury Department in the White House, and we're going to get bailed out. And that's exactly what's going to happen. Same thing with private equity. They're going to get bailed out too, either directly or through some sort of runaround. Make no mistake about it. Okay? They're closest to the money. I mean, Wilbur Ross, our Commerce Secretary, big private equity guy, big investor. Our Secretary of the Treasury, Steven Mnuchin, Goldman Sachs guy, one of his best pals, is Eddie Lambert, big hedge fund guy. I'm not sure if he is still the CEO and chairman of Sears because of all of the fiasco that's going on with Sears, the multiple bankruptcies and all of that restructuring. So I don't know at this time if he's actually still the CEO and or chairman. But Eddie Lambert, a good old buddy of our Treasury Secretary, big hedge fund guy. Big money, okay? These guys are going to get bailed out, all right? So much for drain the swamp, all right? You guys just, you know, I told you this months ago, when you wake up to the fact that the kiddie pool has not even been drained, let alone the swamp. Now it is staring you right in the face. And how many of you are so eager to go vote for Donald Trump? You have no wall, you have deficits that are not cut in half. They have doubled. Now they are going to quadruple if we're lucky. We have no fantastic deal with China. Come on. Tax cuts that went to corporate America that squandered them on share buybacks, not on capital expenditures, not on investments, on share buybacks. All comes crumbling down. And now they all go back to Washington, D.C., and you got a president and a government on both sides, mind you, Democrats and Republicans. Oh, well, this wasn't their fault. Nobody's complaining. There are no fiscal conservatives. There is nobody saying, oh, my God, look what's happening to the deficit and the national debt. What are we going to do? No downsizing of government whatsoever. No Republican with a backbone. Nowhere to be found. And there's no Democrat with a backbone to be found either. We're bailing out corporate America. Where are all these people screaming about corporate America? Oh, yeah, bail them out. Now are you starting to understand why I am calling for a peaceful revolution, that these parties have got to go, that there is no difference between them. Nothing. It is an illusion. It is a wrestling match for your entertainment. That is all it is. You're a sucker if you buy a ticket. That's all it is. Leave these parties. Become a libertarian, Green Party, independent, constitutionalist, unaffiliated, Mickey Mouse Club. I don't care. Leave them. They have left you a long, long time ago. And then you have the President of the United States over the past couple of days saying that his power is total. What have I warned this audience since the impeachment trial? That if he is acquitted, which of course we predicted was going to be the case because that was what was going to happen, he is going to feel completely vindicated, exonerated, everything, and that he is above the law. He had stated before the impeachment that the power in the Constitution gives the president basically supreme authority, which it does not. It does not. Our Constitution, this country was founded on making sure that no one person has that type of authority. So I don't know what the president is smoking. Has he never taken a history class? Who's put this idea into his head? I have no idea. Anybody worthy of that office should never utter those words. Never. Not once. But now he's back there again in the midst of all of his COVID-19 daily press conferences saying he has total authority to open up, shut down the economy, and to tell governors what to do and when to do it. And I think he's probably of the mindset to think that, hey, I'm doing all this work for all these governors. They owe me a favor. So if I say open, they're going to say how high? They're going to say when, sir? Not going to happen. And I can assure you, if I was a governor of one of these states, whether or not my economy, my state was ready to open or not, I'm going to buck the president because this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous, these types of utterances coming out of his mouth. It's unbecoming. Now he's starting to waver a little bit. Oh, no, I'm not, you know, I don't have that kind of power. Of course you don't. You're not a king. Too many love letters, perhaps, with the North Korean leader there, Kim Jong-un, President Xi, President Putin, Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. That's not how it works here, Mr. President. It's not how it works here. You want to be a total dictator? Go over to one of those countries. Have a ball. Good luck to you. Not here. Not going to happen. So that's some of the news, but back to the oil conundrum, right? So I want to take the time to read an article out from Reuters today because, you know, it's getting interesting with, you know, this difference. I mean, this dichotomy, this divergence, I don't know what you want to call it, the insanity between these rugged individual free market capitalists who just love making all this money when everything's cheap and easy and free. But then once the going gets tough, oh no, I have to come to the government. I have to come get regulated. No, you got to save me. It's pathetic. This is why these companies, these people got to go. I mean, if not for any other reason, it's just for that. Texas hearing on oil production curbs stirs a hornet's nest. This is out of Reuters. Texas energy regulators on Tuesday started to hear from dozens of energy executives on an initiative calling for the state to mandate an output cut to stem the sharpest oil price drop in decades. Oil and gas companies are gushing red ink and cutting tens of thousands of workers as oil prices have crashed to about $22 a barrel from $61 in January. On Monday, Texas refiner Valero Energy Corp. forecast a first quarter loss of up to $2.1 billion, yes, billion with a B, on falling demand. The proposal, submitted by executives from Shell producers Pioneer Natural Resources and Parsley Energy, has stirred up anger at the Texas Railroad Commission, the state's oil and gas regulator, for considering cutbacks, in fury that livelihoods are disappearing. The industry is heading for a historic collapse with Permian Basin production still growing and storage filling, Pioneer Chief Executive Scott Sheffield warned commissioners on Tuesday. He predicted $3 to $10 per barrel oil in the next several weeks. You heard right, $3 to $10 per barrel in the next several weeks. Quote, "This is probably going to be worse than 1986. Demand is not going to come roaring back," end quote. Well, he better send a message to Thunder Thumbs because he's of the mindset that there is nothing but pent-up demand. So one of these gentlemen is wrong. With storage likely to fill in mid-May, Plains All-American Pipeline now requires proof of destination to ship oil, said President Harry Pefanis, who did not take a position for or against the cuts. Quote, "We act as a storage facility for everybody that doesn't have a market." Adding that the company has warned producers, quote, "There is a wall coming." So there's a limit to how much can be stored and what even some of these storage companies are going to take on. Continuing, companies are already cutting spending as much as 50%, and U.S. shale output has started falling, said Lee Tillman, CEO of Marathon Oil, who opposes state-mandated cuts. Quote, "I would argue that among global producers, the U.S. has acted first and has acted quite strongly. The bottom line is we're already cutting and cutting deeply," end quote. But Marilyn Krabeek, who owns a small oil company, said small producers were failing, something she blamed on government inaction. Quote, "This is my retirement, and I will die poor," end quote, she wrote in a letter to the commission in favor of the production curbs. Oh, stop the presses. Stop the presses. Woe is us. Little Miss Marilyn Krabeek is going to lose her retirement and die poor. Stop the presses. Stop free market capitalism. Stop everything for this woman. The hearing is being held days after the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allies agreed to reduce their output by 9.7 million barrels per day in June and of May of this year. Other non-OPEC countries and government reserve purchases could lift the total reduction to 19 million barrels per day, according to some analysts. So there you have it. Thunder Thumbs, if he tallies up other non-OPEC countries and governments, of course, they would have to comply with everything as well. Then maybe, just maybe, we'll get to 19 million, maybe 20 million barrels per day. Don't hold your breath. Even if that happens, it ain't going to make much of a difference. However, U.S. crude futures plunged nearly 6% on Tuesday to about $21 a barrel, as we noted earlier, below the average cost of production in all Texas oil fields. Traders have bet the historic OPEC deal was not large enough to counter oil demand destruction caused by coronavirus-related travel restrictions and business halts. Wow, who could have thunk that? At least two votes on the three-member Texas Railroad Commission are needed to pass the proposal. Commissioner Ryan Sitton has pushed for evaluating statewide cuts, while Wayne Christian, the commission's current chairman, and Christy Craddock, the third commissioner, have been careful not to take a position. Craddock voiced a common industry concern during the hearing that output curbs could cause operators to shift production to other states, such as New Mexico and North Dakota. Quote, "What if other states don't do this?" Craddock asked. See, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Somebody with a brain. Somebody who understands not static analysis, but dynamic analysis. What if other states don't do this? What if other regulators don't mandate production curbs? And all of these companies have other assets in other states, and they got debts to pay. They got costs to cover. Pick up, pack up, leave Texas, go to North Dakota, go to New Mexico or elsewhere. Huh. Interesting, isn't it? All three commissioners asked executives about the state's thousands of smaller oil producers, which Christian said, quote, are going to be shut down, end quote, and might get wiped out if they cannot access pipelines and markets. Some of the state's largest and most influential oil companies, Exxon, Chevron, and Occidental Petroleum, have opposed imposing limits, along with some of the largest trade organizations. Of course they have. They have the money. They have the connect. They have the direct connection to Uncle Sam's checkbook. There's no money there, but don't worry. They have a direct line to the Federal Reserve. They don't have money either, but they can print it. Of course they do. What's that word? Say it with me. Consolidation. They want all of these people wiped out. All of these little corporations, companies wiped out. Little Miss Marilyn Craig Creek, whatever the hell her name is, she's gone. See you later, Marilyn. Buy ExxonMobil stock. Good luck. These big boys want it all, and they're going to get it. The idea, however, has gained proponents elsewhere. A group of Oklahoma oil producers on Monday filed a request with their state also asking for a hearing to consider production curbs. You know, it's amazing. One of the industries that has built the United States has been energy. It's been oil. Standard Oil Company, Rockefeller, all that jazz, right? Rugged individualism, free market capitalism. Now all these crybabies, you know, they love it when they're making their money. They love it when they can buy their house on the Hamptons. But when things get tough, they got to go back to the government to ask for help and to bail them out. I say no. It's a joke. See you later. I don't care if you're Exxon, Chevron, Occidental Petroleum, Little Miss Maryland, Craig Creek, whatever. See you later. See ya. I don't know what else to tell you. Because if I go out of business, are you going to cut me a check? If I lose in the stock market, are you going to write me a check? I don't think so. I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, should all of us be going and marching on Washington right now, demanding checks so that our entire 401ks, IRAs, and any other type of investments that we have are completely replenished? Shouldn't we be doing that? Because these people are doing it. You have hedge funds are doing it. Private equity firms are doing it. Talk about being the beneficiaries of easy and cheap money and credit. Give me a break, people. They're going to get it. Make no mistake about it. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. You already have the president and some politicians already complaining that they're already running out of money, which is somewhat laughable because they don't have money to begin with, but they're already running out of money that they don't have to give to small businesses that are already running out of money and shuttering their doors. And we already know that the House and the Senate aren't coming back until May. It's April 14th. It's still at least 2-3 weeks away before they're going to get their asses back in Washington, D.C. We're in the midst of a pandemic. We're in the midst of a financial and economic crisis. We're in the midst of the first steps of the domino effect that we highlighted yesterday and throughout the entirety of this podcast since it has been online. And these, I really want to lay it out here, they are home. They're on vacation. They're comfy. They're comfy. They can't even be in Washington, D.C. to get things done. I mean, they'd probably screw it up anyway. But they don't care. They don't care. One after the next. The hits just keep on coming. The oil conundrum, not for this audience. You knew it was going to take place. You knew it was going to happen. You knew the rebalancing has to take place. You understand what's going on. You understand the amount of debt and credit that is in the system. You understand that the solution is deleveraging. You understand that the solution is restructuring bankruptcies. These assets aren't going to go away. Airplanes aren't going to disappear. And that's another one. Now you're starting to get some headway or some sort of agreement between the United States government and the airlines. Oh, well, thank God. Thank God. They squandered billions and billions and billions of dollars over the past decade that they could have saved up for a rainy day to carry them over for a couple of months, but no, they can't do that. They can't even issue new shares. Some of the same ones that they bought back. Can't do that. Let's just go. Let's call up Donnie Boy, and let's call up Stevie Mnuchin, and let's ask for taxpayer money. And they get it. And they got it. There's not going to be any strings attached. There's not going to be anything. They might put something out there in the paper to appease you, to make you think that they're being tough, but they're not being tough. This is a joke. It's a joke. But don't worry, you're going to get $1,200, so sit down and shut up. Wall Street, corporate America, trillions. Drop of a hat. No restrictions, no oversight, nothing. You're going to get $1,200. Ain't it great to be an American? Please like, share, subscribe. Leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.